choir. Thank you, praise team. Thank you, Jennifer, for leading us. I was standing there thinking, wow, what a journey we've had this Christmas season. It all started, I think it was November, wonderful team that we had the Bell Choir concert here in the afternoon that was so wonderful. And a week after that, we had the tree lighting. And I think just one of the most beautiful trees we've ever had. It was a great event. We had the women's event, I think, the next week. And then we had the choir concert on a Sunday night. There was a progressive dinner for the youth. I mean, we've been doing a lot. It's been a great season. It all comes down to today and tomorrow. And I hope that you all have the most merry of Christmases with you and your family. But today, we're concluding our Advent sermon series, which we have been calling God With Us. And you may remember that what we're doing in this series is we're looking at four stories that lead up to the birth of Christ. And then we're kind of asking, how does the presence of God in those stories enable characters in the stories to address or otherwise overcome fears that they experience at the greatest point of their need? And across the series, we've said that these fears are kind of timeless fears that probably all of us experience at one time or another. And so the first week, we talked about Joseph, and we talked about his fear of what other people thought about him. And that's certainly one that we can relate to. Then, and what God calls us to do. And sometimes God calls us to do hard things. And we're fearful. Sometimes God calls us to do hard things. And we're fearful of that. We're afraid. The very next week, I preached on Mary again and talked about the fear of going it alone. This fear that when something happens to us, that we may have to go it alone. And today, we're going to take up yet another kind of timeless human fear that I'm guessing everybody here has experienced at one time or another, and that is the fear of rejection. It's the fear of rejection. And here's what we know. We know that the fear of rejection and the experience of rejection are very debilitating for us, right? And there's some sense in which the experience of rejection, if you've ever had that, actually feeds the fear of rejection. And so I'm going to begin with this question, which you can answer for yourself, but have you ever been rejected? Have you ever experienced the fear of rejection? And so you can think about that, but for me, the answer is yes and yes. There is no doubt that in my life, I have experienced rejection, I think, and the fear of rejection. Boston University School of Theology, that I think about when I was at Boston University School of Theology, finishing up there in my third year, and I was beginning to apply for PhD programs in clinical psychology. I had this crazy idea that I could be a psychologist and a minister, and so I was applying. I was bold. I was aggressive. I was applying at 13 different universities and colleges across the Southeast. I mean, I applied at Duke, and I applied at University of North Carolina. I applied at North Carolina State and Georgia and Georgia State and the University of Tennessee and Florida State, and I think maybe Auburn. I can't think of all of them, but I applied to all of these places, and I'd had a great record at Boston University. I mean, BU, what a great institution. I'd done quite well there, so I was expecting some good results, and I hate to tell you, but this is the truth. I got absolutely zero invitations to a PhD program in clinical psychology, a big fat zero. I mean, 13 colleges and universities reject me. And I gotta tell you, that didn't feel very good. But I think how the rejections were delivered to me, you know? I mean, rejections were delivered to me, you know? I mean, in some instances, the colleges and universities, they were just pretty straightforward. They were like, you are not invited to participate in our PhD program in clinical psychology. Thank you for your application. Blah. You know, that was it. You know, then there were some that were a little bit nicer than that. There were some that were like, hey, you have some great qualities. There's some parts of your application that fit right into our program. But unfortunately, We don't have room for you. We don't have enough money for you. We don't have this or that for you. Why don't you think about applying again next year? So that was a little bit better. I think the nicest one that I got was from North Carolina State, and they didn't send me a letter. They actually called me on the phone. They said, "We think you're a great candidate. We think you have a lot of pluses. You just don't fit with our program. We think it's great." I mean, they'd really read the application. "We think it's great that you want to blend ministry and psychology, but here's what you need to know." And this was really helpful to me. They said, "You really should be targeting counseling psychology, that field, rather than clinical ministry. And we, counseling psychology fits so much better with ministry, and we applaud you for that. And we would encourage you to apply again next year." And that was like a rejection letter that made you feel really good. Like, I'm rejected, but I feel really good. Now, not every rejection letter was like that. There were definitely some rejection letters that were very, very painful and difficult and upsetting. And I don't know if we have any Florida State University fans in the house today, but the worst one came from Florida State University. It did. I mean, they just sent me a letter that just stated the facts. It was like, "Received application on such and such a date, boom. Evaluated application on such and such a date, boom. Decided about application on such and such a date, boom." And then they had these two big squares in the bottom of the page. One said accepted, one said rejected. And rejected had this big fat X in it. And not even a thank you or a sincerely. That was it. That was it. "Thank you very much, Florida State University. I am certain your football team has fallen because of this sin that you've committed against me. I know it is. I know it is." No, have you ever feared being rejected? Have you ever feared that you were going to be rejected? I'm guessing that everyone in the sound of my voice has feared rejection and has had the experience of rejection. I mean, we can be rejected in a lot of different areas of our life. We can be rejected educationally, which is what was happening to me. We can be rejected socially. We can be rejected emotionally. We can be rejected, and this may be the worst one, we can be rejected romantically. And that's never any fun, right? But it can happen. It can happen to all of us. So by now you may be wondering, why am I taking time on the Sunday before Christmas to talk about the experience and the fear of rejection? Well, I'm talking about it because when you read the Christmas story, you find that it is a classic rejection to redemption story. I mean, you think about Mary and Joseph. When Mary revealed that she was pregnant, Joseph said, his first response was rejection, right? He said, "I think I'm going to divorce her." And God came to him in a dream and changed all that, redeemed all of that. I mean, the classic rejection story in the narratives is the story of Mary and Joseph going to Bethlehem to register for the census. And when they get there, Mary is great with child, and there's no room for them where? In the inn. I mean, seriously, what an incredible rejection story that they experience. Even the wise men later in Matthew chapter 2, they're coming to celebrate this newborn king, and they are rejected by King Herod, and so they go home by another route. And then there are the shepherds. Then there are the shepherds. And theirs is a classic rejection to redemption story. Now, we may not really think about it that way, but back in that time and day, a shepherd, they were kind of the ultimate rejects of society. They were looked down upon. They were not thought well of. Now, it's because hard
for us to wrap our heads around that idea, because our image of a shepherd, at least my image of a shepherd, is this image of Jesus, and he has a staff in his hand, and all these children are gathering around him, and it's this wonderful, gracious image of Jesus, the good shepherd. Or maybe it's that old image that used to hang in our Sunday school classes of Jesus with a lamb on his shoulder, or a sheep on his shoulder. It was the lost sheep from the parable of the lost sheep. And Jesus, the good shepherd, had gone out and found this lost sheep. And so we have this kind of romanticized and this marvelous image of shepherds. But let me tell you, before Jesus, shepherds were not glamorized in that way. They were not imaged in that way. They were not thought about that way. And it left most shepherds feeling rejected and left out and quite distant from God. And you say, well, why would they feel left out and rejected and distant from God, from our Creator? Why would they feel that way? Well, I can think of two or three reasons why. For one, shepherds back in the day felt unworthy. They felt unworthy. And there were many reasons for that, probably. But I think one of them was that it was kind of taught to the people that shepherds were not worthy of religious experience, that shepherds were not worthy of a relationship with God. I mean, they were kind of nomads. They were wanderers, and they were gone a lot of the time. And so they weren't there when those ceremonial rites were happening. They weren't there on Sunday morning at the religious experience. They weren't there. And so because of that, they were considered by many to be ceremonially unclean and unrighteous and kind of not right with God. That's how society viewed them. And then you added to that that they were around sheep all the time. I don't know how many of you have been on an Iowa farm where there are a lot of sheep. Has anybody been on an Iowa farm? Or any farm, thank you, where there was a lot of sheep. Have you ever smelled a sheep that was out in the pasture? Smell, so you don't know that sheep do not smell very good at all. They don't. They stinketh, is what the King James Version would say. They stinketh. They don't smell very good. So you have these shepherds who've given their lives to all of these sheep, and they're not only ceremonially unclean, they are physically unclean. And so in that day, they deduced that they must also be spiritually unclean. Clean and unworthy. And they're so unworthy that you don't even want to touch them. That's what people said. Can you imagine how you would feel if they were saying, don't even touch it? So they were unworthy. They felt rejected and distant from God because they were inadequate for the day. They couldn't measure up. They didn't have education. They were pretty unsocialized. When they compared themselves with other people spiritually, are you kidding me? I think chance. And I think we understand this. I think we understand social comparison. Have you ever walked into somebody's home and they've just had an update, right? And you're like, oh my gosh, number one, where did you get all the money for this update? I mean, seriously. I mean, how did you get a hold of Joanna Gaines and get her to do it, really? I mean, it's incredible. And you see the house and you admire it and you go home. I don't know if you've ever had this experience. And you look at your house and it just feels so out of date, right? And you feel so inadequate. Or maybe it's your neighbor's yard. And you're like, where did they get all of that rich black Iowa soil? I mean, it's not fair. Their yard looks so felt inadequate. You can imagine feeling unworthy and socially, economically, educationally, separate from everybody else. But then there was one other big thing. It was spiritually, they were inadequate. I mean, there was one big rule in the Jewish church that you take a Sabbath, that you go to church one day a week, that you take a spiritual rest. And these shepherds were like, we've got to be with these sheep 24/7. There's no way we can take a rest. I truly think they felt like chronic spiritual failures because they felt so inadequate. So they were unworthy. They were inadequate. And then here's the third one. They were unloved. They were unloved by society. They were called thieves. Even if they weren't a thief, they were called thieves. They were looked over. They were in the lowest possible post. They were unloved. And I would imagine that everybody here has experienced the feeling of not being loved, of not being cared for by another human being. I would say they felt unloved all the time. And so these shepherds, they were rejected and they felt distant from God because they were unworthy, felt inadequate, and they felt unloved. And what I want to say now is that all of that changed with the birth of Jesus. All of that changed on Christmas Day. All of that changed when the angels came to the shepherds and they moved them from feeling rejected to feeling redeemed. Moved them from feeling devalued by society to feeling valued by God. And so I want us to hear this scripture this morning from Luke chapter 2 in the context of these shepherds moving from feeling rejected to feeling redeemed. And there were shepherds living out in the fields nearby, keeping watch over their flocks by night. And an angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were what? Say it with me. They were terrified. They had experienced rejection over and over and over again, and they, because of that, feared verse 10. It starts with a big, huge, important word, but. redeeming here because he not only does not reject these shepherds, he calls them. He enrolls them. He says, I want you, unworthy, inadequate, unlovable shepherd, I want you to be the ones to announce my son's birth. You know, it's just this incredible moment of redemption because it's like God is saying, I want the ones who are the bad news in society to be the first persons to share with society the good news of Jesus. It's such a redemptive moment. And so I love the shepherds. I love the shepherds. Relate to the shepherds. I think we've all stood. Relate to the shepherds. I think we've all stood in their shoes. So it's a great story that we celebrate every single Christmas. But the question is, what does it teach us? What are the practical takeaways of this story that we can use quickly in life? And I can summarize the words, believe and receive. It's two words, believe and receive. This is what the shepherds call us and teach us to do. To believe and receive. So say that with me. Believe and receive. That's the practical outcome of this story. The shepherds are telling us to believe that all of us here matter to God. That we matter to the creator of the universe. That we are celebrated. That we are loved by the creator of the universe. That there are in the Bible, there's all of these names. That we are a treasured possession. That we are a people belonging to God. That we are a conqueror, priesthood of God. There's all of these things. You are more than a conqueror, Paul says about you. He says that we are the bride of Christ together. We make up the bride of Christ. That we are stamped with the image of God. That the message of the shepherds and the angels is that you are one of God's masterpieces. And so you've got to believe that you matter to God. Signature in your soul that God's love is all over your being. That you believe that you matter to God. Then secondly, that we've got to receive the gift that matters the most. That there's a gift. You know, this Christmas, you're going to go home. Maybe you've already done it. Some families were celebrating this weekend. And you're going to sit around the tree and you're going to pass out gifts and you're going to give each other these amazing, incredible, wonderful things. You know, you see on these commercials like, you know, a family gives each other a car. That's not going to happen in my family. You know, but people do that, or they give them exquisite jewelry or, you know, technology to the nth degree. You know, you're going to have these amazing gifts and I celebrate that with you. That's a good thing. But here's the only time that can become a problem. The only time that can become a problem is when all of those things that we pursue and we want and we seek after take the place of the one thing that we need the most. The one thing that matters the most in our life is why the church exists. It's why we're here on Sunday mornings. It's why we do missions and we make sacrifices and we give money and do all this stuff because of this one amazing shepherd saying, believe that you matter to God. Hear the shepherds, the energy, the excitement of that night when they received the gift that matters the most. And I can't think of a better time than right now to invite you to receive that. How do you receive the gift? And you say, well, how do you receive the gift? Because here's the deal. It's not only believing the stuff. It's not only believing in it. It's receiving it. And so I will say it like this at the camp that I do or have yet done in the past. I would say, suppose I have this great meal. Let's say it's the north end of Boston, and it's a place called Florentine's that I like to go to, and they have this to die for, Chilean sea bass over rice, over asparagus. It is unbelievable, incredible. And let's just say I had the time and energy to describe it in great detail, and by the end of my description, your mouths were just watering, like, can you tell us more? We believe you that that Chilean sea bass is incredible. You receive it. You take it in. And so you experience it. And so here's how we would talk about that at camp. We'd say there's three responses that people can make to this gift that matters more than anything else. Maybe you've never received it, not one time. You've been going to church your whole life, I don't know. Or maybe you did a long, long time ago, but maybe it doesn't seem real. But the first step we take at camp is that you say, yes, I want this gift in my life. And there are kids that will come forward at camp for the very first time saying, yes, I want that gift. That's the first group. Then there's a second group, and the second group are the ones that said yes a long time ago, or yes 6 months ago, or yes yesterday, and then they live to know. Right? So you say yes, but you live a no. Is there anybody else in that boat besides me? You said yes, but then you live a no. So guess what? With this amazing gift, you get to say yes again. You do. So that's the second group. And then the third group. And my heart goes out to them. Because life has been so rough, looked at them and said, no. It's like God looked at them and said, no. And we probably all know people like that. And so it's our job to love them so much that they hear God say yes. That night, somehow, when the angels spoke, it was like God loved them so much. He loved those unworthy, those inadequate, those rejected, distant shepherds. He loved them so much. They heard this incredible, yes, I love you. Yes, I'm with you. Yes. I accept you. Let's bow our heads for a moment of prayer.